Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Test.
Good. Test.
All good. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to podcast episode number 855. We are the Fight Disciples. This is your boxing review from the weekend just gone. And what a weekend it was. Lots to talk about, lots to get stuck into, lots to get excited about and enthuse over. And, of course, to point into the direction of what might just come next. But I know what you're thinking, especially if you're watching this on YouTube. Yes. Where is it? Where's Hugh Hefner gone? Where's the robe? Eh? Why is he dressed normally today? Jeez, man. I'll leave you alone, right, for one day. And you turn the thing into the Playboy Mansion, don't you? What the hell was going on Friday night, lad?
It was so late. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, man, I'm putting my dressing gown on. It feels wrong not to be in my dressing gown this time on a Friday night. Good old Frank letting them bloody fight cards run until 1 o'clock in the morning. Absolutely ridiculous. I'm sure we'll discuss that at some point. But
now, straight in. The pacing.
I tweeted. Jeez. Do you know what? I tweeted. I actually went from, I think it was the Mark Chamberlain fight. After that fight finished, went upstairs, put the plug in the bath, ran in the bath, poured in a big dollop of Radox, potted around. The bath was red hot. I got in the bath. I had a bath. Got out, got dried. Put my pajamas on, got my dressing gown on, went downstairs, and Madrinov and Kabanov were just getting into the ring. I didn't miss anything. It was absolutely the most ridiculous break of all time. And that was like more or less between every fight.
Mate,
it's just insane. They just don't get it. They just don't get it.
They need to sort the pacing out.
Because
oh my days. Like, I think. Obviously, I was doing a different watch along, wasn't I? I'll talk about yours in a minute, which is tremendous. It's the greatest thing. In fact, go back and just watch him and his Hugh Hefner for a good 2 hours, just spitting lyrics and the reaction to the eventual finish of this is tremendous. But I got told, right, 20 past 11 UK time, that's when main event will be cracking on. No bother.
Yeah.
I think it was 12:27. So 27 minutes past midnight, I think it was, when everything got cracking. Check this out. This is the best bit. So I'm obviously doing this on a national radio station, and we decided to do it on one of its TV platforms as well. You can't just crack on them. They've got allotted broadcast times for programs with breaks and all these types of things. The fight starts. My director goes into my headphones, says, "Yeah, Adam, just to let you know, we need to be off air at." 56 minutes past midnight. And I went, started to figure it out in my head. I said, hang on a minute. What if this goes long? What if this goes the distance? I said, what if this goes the distance? It says, yeah, we've got to be off at 12:56, mate. So we'll miss the last round or the last two rounds and the result? What? I said, nothing we can do about it, mate. They're an hour late for the main event. This is ridiculous. Thank God AJ turned up with his big right hand. Otherwise, that could have been absolute kamikaze. Can you imagine?
Imagine that stream on TalkSport. You're chatting away and go, well, here we go. Come to the end of round number 10. It's probably a 5-5 split. It's all to play for in the last two rounds. But right here at TalkSport, we've got to go. We're passing over to Alan Titchmarsh for the Sunday morning breakfast show. Bye, everyone. Been made.
Tune into breakfast tomorrow for the result. But mate, in all seriousness, listen, that's a proper allotted time for the TV. They can't do anything about that. It's because of the ridiculous pacing of the event.
Yeah, come absolutely on. Horrific. Mate, honestly, I had a couple of beers and then I was, as you know, I was supposed to go live for the co-main event, but because Nick Ball, in my eyes and the eyes of pretty much everybody with fucking eyes, was about to be announced as a world champion, I was like, that's a Mike the producer. Forget it, man. Just go live now. Just go live now. And I had four cans ready, all chilled out outside, and I had my pint glass with me, and I was like, hey, everyone, hey, Mimi, Jess and Gamma, about to see a Scouts world champion here. Happy days. Anyway, the night plays out as the night plays out, and suddenly I'm down to my last can, and I'm thinking, homemade events literally just started.
Mate.
So at one point in the broadcast, I had to go, excuse me, everyone, I'm just going to go to the fridge and get more beer. So you have to put a title card up mid-show.
Nick's gone for a beer.
The show will resume shortly. I'm like, oh my
he's
God.
He's getting tanked up. He's run out of ale. He's done eight cans. He's done eight cans and he's on the Emblem Core main event.
By the end of the fight, by the time he was done, I was midway through my eighth can. I only had nine cans left. So rather like you, if I'd have finished that ninth can, even though it was about round number eight or whatever, I'd have just gone, sorry guys, I'm just going to have to turn off mate. Now. And I need to go make a brandy chaser or something.
Mate, I went on Saturday night to a mate's birthday party Saturday night, right? And everybody was chatting about it. What do you reckon of this? What do you reckon of that? And he come up to me and said, mate, I watched it this morning because it got to like midnight and I thought, fuck this, I'm off. Yeah. Just sacked it off and went to bed.
Yeah. There's a few people in the chat, like honestly, the amount of Fight Disciples that came and joined me and got pissed with me was absolutely immense. It was brilliant. Literally thousands of people. It was brilliant. And we were having it was wicked because I had two screens on the go. So I got Jane to sort it out before she went to bed.
Of course you did, because you didn't do it yourself, did you?
Technologically, I was. So I had the zone feed on my laptop right here, so it looked like I'd be looking at the camera. And then here I had another screen with all the feed on and questions. Chat. So it was wicked. We were just chatting away, shooting the shit. Absolutely brilliant. Came up with a new merch concept idea. I'll tell you about that later. Sold a load of socks by accident. We were chatting about the socks. It was wicked. Honestly, such a good night.
It looked it, mate. Your reaction to the main event's hilarious, by the way. This is why you're not on TV. I'm going to be honest with you, Nicholas. Right? This is why they can't trust you. Because you say things like, oh, he's folded him in half. Folded him in half.
That was accurate. That was absolutely accurate. He did fold him in half. He did look dead in that moment. Yeah, mega. Mega.
Mate, it looked ace. And thank you so much for everybody that tuned into us last week on those live programs. We're going to do more stuff like that. On the big ones, we're going to do more stuff like that, where we're going to do live podcasts every single night of the week.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming out. Thanks for all your nice comments. And obviously, thanks for joining Hugh Hefner on Friday night in all his glory for the live event. Fingers crossed that the people out in Saudi Arabia have learnt from the pacing of that event. And maybe next time, it's a bit quicker. Yeah. Because I was thinking about it. If it's 12:30 for us, what's that? 2:30 for them?
Yeah.
Is it 2 hours or 3 hours, Ed?
It's 3 hours.
3:30 in the morning, they're having a scrap.
Yeah.
Come on.
So apparently, I was chatting to a mate of mine who was at the last one. He works for the board. And he was at the Fury and Ganu one. He was working. And they got picked up from his hotel. From the time he got picked up at the hotel by a minibus to take him to the venue, to the time the same minibus brought him back to the hotel, he was out of the hotel for 20 hours. 20 hours covering a boxing event. That is absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous for anybody to have to put that kind of a shift in. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And as you say, people were dropping off. I went to my little fella's football the next day, and a couple of fellas were going, oh, I had to watch it back this morning because once it got to 12 o'clock, I was like, no chance, man. That's me done. I'm knackered. So it's like they all aspire to do a show like the UFC. The UFC, the key to that show is the pacing. Speed, every 30 minutes, walk. Every 30 minutes, there's a ring walk. Every 30 minutes, set your watch by it. Doesn't matter whether it goes the distance or whether it's a first round finish.
Quarter past, quarter to the hour, every hour.
Bingo. Every single event, bomb, bomb, bomb. And I know it's more difficult with boxing because some you got 6 rounders, 8 rounders, 10 rounders. But it wouldn't be impossible to go, right, that 6 rounder, the ring walk is then. The ring walk for the next fight is then. And you can always stay within 5 minutes, especially with a couple of finishes along the way. You don't have to go early. You just have to keep it tight. So have a fight go. And then for the best part of 30, 35 minutes before the next fight on the main card, with all due respect, I was, you know, I watched the Zone feed because I, you know, I'm a big Barry Jones fan. And once I seen he was on comms, I was like, right, the Zone's for me. But I was watching that and I'm like, I was bored of hearing everybody in the presenting team. And it's not their fault, but I was bored of hearing them talk about AJ's this and Ngannou's that. And, you know, as I said on the night, I was like, I'm here. I've bought the pay-per-view. You've sold it to me all week.
Give
You've
me
convinced
the fight.
Me all week. This is where I need to be on Friday night is here. You've told me. You've sold it to me. Stop selling me the fight now. I'm fucking here sitting in front of the camera, sitting in front of the screen, waiting for the fight, and you're still trying to sell it to me. I've paid 20 quid. Give me entertainment. But instead, it was just like regurgitating. I was like, oh, my God, what the hell are they doing? And if it's because they didn't want it to happen until late on because they want to try and wait for the East Coast of America to wake up to snatch a bit of that audience, then announce that and say the fight will start at 1 a.m. UK time or whatever it may be. Don't kid everyone and say it's 2 hours earlier than it's actually going to be. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, man. Listen, should we actually talk about some fights now?
Yeah. Maybe that was the chaos bit of the knockout chaos.
I think it was.
The pace.
Listen, Anthony Joshua did what Anthony Joshua was supposed to do. That's what an elite boxer does to a novice. We said last week that Anthony Joshua would win this fight. We were just in flux as to how he was going to do it. And I think a lot of us, I was absolutely in this field. Don't want to speak to everybody at home. But I was adamant that he would stay out of trouble. He'd box Ngannou's socks off, be too elusive. And he could probably come through on a points decision. How wrong could you be? Because Anthony Joshua was just like, I ain't sticking around here, man. You ain't getting paid for no overtime. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, I'll show him some basic stuff, see if he reacts to it. And then I'll take care of business. And he did. And with all due respect to the finish, right? We can all get giddy about it and say, wow, AJ this and AJ that. And I'm sure we will at certain points in this podcast. But what Anthony Joshua did there was basic fundamentals. He showed him basic fundamentals. He got Francis Ngannou to react to basic fundamentals, something that Tyson Fury didn't do last October, and he took care of it. And that's what it's supposed to look like when an elite boxer takes on someone that has never won a boxing match before. It really is that simple.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the performance against Tyson Fury led us all to believe that Francis had made this incredible transition, that he had had this incredible string to his bow, and maybe he was kidding us all along, and he really is a competent boxer. But in reality, when you look at how Anthony Joshua just completely and utterly exposed him and dismantled him for being the raw novice boxer that he is, you look back and think Fury was absolutely horrifically poor when he fought Ngannou. Horrifically poor, stood in front of him, allowed Ngannou to do things that he shouldn't have been allowed to do. A lot of conversation about Ngannou was, you know, not necessarily the backstory of the power, but it was like, wow, it was the way he went from southpaw to orthodox against Fury, kept throwing Fury off and he couldn't get his timing right, blah, blah, blah. A raw novice shouldn't be able to do that. And yet, when he tried to do it against Anthony Joshua, as soon as he went southpaw, Anthony Joshua just went, you're joking, aren't you? Boom. Straight down the pipe, he hits the floor. It's like, that's exactly what should happen when a complete novice gets in there and starts switching stances and fucking thinking he's Sugar Ray Leonard against someone who's a career boxer who just go, well, you just made completely the face. Switching stances is really difficult. That's why very few boxers do it. And if you're a novice and you're doing it, you're leaving yourself wide open. And AJ just absolutely nailed him. And once he nailed him once, suddenly Ngannou and all the confidence that Ngannou took from the Fury performance and all the talk about him. Oh my God, he's here on merit. He should be here. UBC putting him in the rankings and all that. He's a boxer now. He's a boxer. He's staying here. He's got this. He's done that. Look what he just did to Tyson Fury. all that which has been in his brain for the last few months, and he's going, yeah, feeding off the confidence going into this fight, thinking, I'm actually going to knock Anthony Joshua out here. Watch this. All that completely disappeared. And as he hit the floor, his brain just went, uh-oh, shit. Now I am in the deep end, and I am completely and utterly out of my depth. And AJ just dismantled him and dismantled him in style. No wonder Fury was sitting ringside with a... He was sitting there, didn't know what to do, and then he started clapping like... Mate, he should be massively embarrassed about what AJ just did to that raw novice. Because I wouldn't even say he carried that novice. He was scraped by and was afforded a shocking decision by the judges. That novice beat him. I agree with AJ when he said the press conference, I should be WBC world champion by now. Mm. He should. I agree with AJ. He should. It offers a lot of questions about where Fury is right now. And it makes that fight going into Usyk a whole lot different.
Yeah. Listen, it's not a gimme that Tyson Fury's turning up and beating Alexander Usyk. Not at all. Not by any stretch of the imagination. And you can't just disregard what happened in October. We all saw what happened in October. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, Francis Ngannou won that fight. Five rounds apiece, knocked down one at him. He won that fight against Tyson Fury. And like you say, it's alarming that you've got two massively chalk and cheese fights here. Massively. And people will say, well, Tyson Fury didn't train. The element of surprise, this, that, and the other, right? Well, hang on a minute. You can't change the narrative. We have had that narrative as fans. Tyson Fury's not had that narrative. He came out and he says, no, I took him seriously. I trained for it and all this. If that's true, that's alarming. Mm-hmm. If what he has told us is true going into October, that is alarming. Given what we saw on Saturday night, on Friday night, yeah. Because on Friday night is what Tyson Fury should have done. As a seasoned career boxer, that is exactly what he should have done to a boxing novice. And that's what Francis Ngannou is. And listen, I don't want to I'm going to praise Francis in a minute or two. I just want to talk about this from a boxing point of view because it was winding me up a lot that when you were speaking to certain people about the crossover of MMA into boxing, and when we were saying, well, it was a circus. The first fight was a circus, and it was a circus because a guy from MMA, elite, doesn't matter how elite he is, should not be able to come into the world of boxing and take on the elite boxer, the premier heavyweight, and do that to him. Mm-hmm. It defied all logic. It defied all logic. And all these people said, yeah, but he's a proper fighting man and he's this. And you're talking shit. You're trying to sell a bullshit narrative to us. We told you that it was a circus. It was a circus. Now, AJ has hopefully sent the circus packing. Mm-hmm. And that's not me saying, I hope he sent Francis Ngannou packing. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the circus. I'm talking about people trying to sell you bollocks. Because that is what an elite boxer does to someone that doesn't know boxing. And that's no hate or disrespect to Francis Ngannou. He hasn't had the time to get to the level of what Anthony Joshua is.
Yeah.
And Anthony Joshua, in some way, shape, or form, saved boxing in a way on Friday night. Because boxing was embarrassed a little bit last year.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua has shown, hang on, mate, this is the sweet science. This is what we do here, and this is how we operate. And in a way, for all boxing fans, and there'll be people watching this that are just boxing fans and not MMA fans, he's done the sport a massive favour on Friday night. A massive favour. He's put it back on the map in a big, big way.
Do you think that same result happens if this fight is Ngannou's first fight in boxing? Or do you think AJ
I don't even think he takes the fight, mate. Because if you think about the narrative pre-Tyson Fury, right? And this is from everybody. Everybody's changed the tune because of what happened in that first fight. It's a circus. It's a joke. It's a farce. It's a this. It's a that. His promoter was saying that. I think even Anthony, a member and his team were saying, what's he doing fighting a geezer out of the world of MMA? But because of that performance, a narrative was created.
Yeah.
And the narrative was easy then to just go, what's he just done? Why has he done that? Right, okay, cool, man. We'll go and take the guy that everybody now thinks is an elite boxer who beat Tyson Fury, and I'll go and show you what's what. So therefore, that changes the mindset. You train properly. You come up with a proper game plan. You go in there, you implement that game plan. You take him out in two rounds. I don't think that if it's Francis's first fight, Anthony would have taken that fight. What? Why would he have done that? Because he'd have just got a lot of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the manner of the performance was excellent. I think he was awesome. Absolutely dialed in. I agree with you, by the way. I don't think he does take the fight. I think if he would have took the fight for whatever strange, unknown reason, which he wouldn't have done.
I think we'd have got a similar outcome, but we'd have got hate. Because think about it. The narrative going into it would have been, what is happening here? This is a farce. Anthony Joshua's fighting Francis Ngannou. Francis Ngannou's never boxed before. He's an MMA guy. Why is he an Olympic gold medalist fighting this? And then Anthony Joshua goes in and smokes him in two rounds. Jeez, mate. It's carnage then, because everybody then goes, told you it was a circus. This is a joke. Boxing's a joke. Absolutely a joke. But because boxing was a joke last year, Anthony Joshua saved it by coming in and saying, listen, man, no. Boxing, that's not what it was supposed to look like, ladies and gentlemen. This is what it was supposed to look like. Bang.
The mad thing is, the loser in all this for me is Ngannou, not just because of his bank balance. The loser in all this is Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury has embarrassed himself with that performance. He embarrassed himself this week. Ngannou put him in his place during the press conference when he said, you know, you're protected by the rules of boxing, all that kind of stuff, which everybody rightly agreed with. And I think right now there's going to be a lot more questions about Tyson Fury and where he's at in his career. People questioning his records and his validity as being the best heavyweight on the planet as he heads into the Usyk fight. There's a lot more questions to be answered, I feel, because I agree with you. Regardless of what Tyson says, and you know, I've had a good relationship with Tyson over the years, and I like Tyson a lot. I like his people a lot. I like everyone around him. But I take everything Tyson Fury says with a pinch of salt. Everything, especially publicly. Privately, that might be different, but publicly, everything he says with a pinch of salt. And the fact when he come out and said, I've taken him serious, you know, I've done a proper training camp, and then looked the way he looked on fight night, which wasn't a guy who took him serious, that was in shape. You know, if I was the Saudis, I'd be a little bit disrespected there. You know, I'm surprised that relationship is as strong as it is, because I'd be like, all the money we're paying you, we give you some low-hanging fruit in by bringing this UFC guy over who we're sorting out with 10 million quid. You're getting a lot more than that. You haven't even got yourself in shape. You haven't even, you know, took this fight seriously.
I actually think that he's done them a favour, you know. I think he's done them a favour, because if you think about what they're trying to achieve, they're trying to showcase Saudi Arabia, aren't they? Come and see us. We're the premier place for all sports. They had the Formula One, didn't they, on Saturday? Yep. They've had the boxing on the Friday. They've got the footy. They've got all these types of things. We're the home of the biggest, greatest events and all
sports,
this type
entertainment.
Of
yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. And they're spending a ton of cash in being able to do that, right? The boxing world, when they announced Fury versus Ngannou, was all over them going, this is a joke, an absolute joke. Think about what happened in the immediate aftermath of that. They announced December 23rd, Fury Usyk.
That's right.
They already announced. Oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, we're not just doing circus. Why is it? And that's what it was. It was the negative pushback. Why do you think I've got so much shit from these people? It's because of the negative pushback showcasing this is a circus. So what happened was they then asked questions to the boxing people that they're connected to. Why are the Western media giving us abuse for this circus fight? You told us that this was going to be good. So then you announced December 23rd, undisputed fight, to shut people like me up. Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden, right, we've got December 23rd, we're doing the undisputed fight. But October doesn't play out as it was supposed to play out. So then you've got a little bit of a patch-up situation in order to save it, and you create a different card for December 23rd. You re-then schedule the undisputed fight for February. That falls off. Then you reschedule it again for May. So that narrative's still on running. But what they've accidentally created, because of Tyson Fury taking the piss, in my opinion, and listen, he says he trained. He says that he was up for it. That's not the Tyson Fury that I've watched.
No.
In that ring, Francis Ngannou.
That wasn't the best heavyweight on the planet. Not even close. That wasn't even a top 20 heavyweight.
Exactly. But because he's done that, he's created a narrative that nobody expected. Nobody expected Francis Ngannou to rock up and, geez, he can box. Geez, he can he's just beaten the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. Or has he? And they created this narrative that nobody expected.
Yeah.
And then what they've done over that period of time, Anthony Joshua's come back. He's teamed up with Ben Davison. He's beaten Otto Wallin in a fight that nobody asked for. Nobody asked for the Wallin fight. They asked for the Wilder fight. They didn't bring that. So he's gone and battered Wallin. Now, this new narrative, if you think this is all happening in 6 months.
Of course.
In 6 months, Anthony Joshua now.
Well, we were supposed to be getting Wilder, if you remember. It was set up because Wilder was on the same card.
Exactly. So Wilder drops the ball. So now all of a sudden it's like going, right, geez, what do we do here? Well, hang on a minute. Tyson Fury has kind of made Francis Ngannou relevant in boxing because he didn't do his job properly. Right. Oh, Wilder's dropped the ball. That was supposed to be it. Oh, can we get away with Ngannou, AJ? Can we get away with that? I think we can get away with it because of this new narrative that everybody didn't actually see coming. Go on, then we can make it happen. Bang. So let's put that on. So in a way, in a really weird way, you're right in what you're saying. They'll probably be thinking, hang on a minute, you're supposed to be the premier heavyweight in the world. Why have you not pulled your finger out and done what he's done? In a weird way, he's actually done them all a favour because he created a narrative that nobody saw coming and now has made AJ into the second coming of Jesus.
Second coming.
It's crazy how this has all happened in 6 months' time. Now for me, I look at this at the weekend and I know exactly what I've seen, all right? Nothing changes in the hierarchy for me in the heavyweight division. From the conversation we had last week, who's the premier heavyweight? I don't think it's defined right now. I think Usyk is the closest out of the three to being able to define it if he can come through a victory against Tyson Fury. But what it absolutely has done this six-month period, it's reignited your thirst for Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua, hasn't it? Because 100%. What? Because 6 months ago, you were all of us it's 6 months ago were like going, it's never going to happen. And do you know something? I'm not that arsed about it happening, to be fair. You know, I kind of think I know what's going to happen in the fight.
We missed the boat on it, yeah, exactly.
Now, I'm like...
AJ's not the same guy, blah, blah, blah. Now, exactly. Part of the chat at the weekend, you know, a lot of the fight disciples were in the group chat going, you know what? Forget about Fury versus Usyk. Bin that now. Let's just do Fury AJ straight away.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they doing? They're all exactly. in on it. Jeez. Mate, no. Stop it. You need to see Usyk. Get the shot at Undisputed.
Because now, you know, even I'm a bit like, AJ looks so much better. Okay, one was a former sparring partner, but I'm not gonna, you know, cast shadow on the Otto Wallin. Otto Wallin was in the best form of his career.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where AJ was at with Ben Davison. It was correct. His fourth new trainer in three fights or whatever it was. I needed to know. Once I seen that performance, that's when I was bought in. Okay, AJ looks different. He's walking different. He's talking different. He's certainly fighting different. He's a lot more aggressive again. Maybe this Ben Davison does thing work. Then he bring in Francis Ngannou, who we all think is actually a boxer, but we soon find out he absolutely isn't. He's a raw novice, and he does what he needs to do. But I'm like, okay, well, that version of AJ, this destructive version of AJ,
yeah.
Now I'm intrigued about a third fight with Usyk. Now I think I'd like to see this guy fight Alexander Usyk. I really would, even though he got comprehensively outboxed on two occasions. In my opinion, he lost those two fights clearly. They went split, in my opinion. They were clear victories for Usyk. This guy, this version of this guy with this coach and this kind of new mentality, I'm intrigued again. So by Tyson Fury dropping the ball with Ngannou massively, he's changed the face of the heavyweight division and he has given up Anthony Joshua the airtime and opportunity to completely reborn as AJ 2.0. It's mental, absolutely mental how things have played out.
Have you noticed as well, in the immediate aftermath, obviously people are having microphones stuck in their faces and everybody's chatting, right? I saw an interview with Tyson Fury about the prospect of fighting Anthony Joshua. Listen, he says all the right things. Yeah, absolutely. I've got to fight Alexander, Alexander Usyk twice. Hang on. Pump the brakes, pal. Pump the brakes. Turki Alshayk has said that the winner of that is fighting the winner of this. There's no rematch clauses don't exist anymore.
Exactly.
I know that you think they do. The old boxing does not exist anymore. Turki Alshayk's the kingmaker. It's Tyson Fury versus Alexander Usyk in May. No need for a rematch unless you have a draw or the summit contentious or that we have an inconclusive ending. If there is a winner off the back of that fight, they fight Anthony Joshua. That is what is next.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation. Now, this is really interesting, right? Because my headspace is really starting to change with boxing, and I've started to think all the things that we've been speaking about for 8 years about binning belts and not being interested in belts and all these types of things. And this all comes from Zhang Parker being on this card as well. And that fight, I know it had a trinket attached to it, but it's irrelevant to me. The belt's irrelevant. It was a good fight on paper, and we got a bit of jeopardy in there, didn't we? And it played out the way that it played it out. We'll get into this in a minute. But I'm like, Anthony Joshua has to keep active. You can't now just go and sit on the fence waiting for Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk. We don't know how that's going to play out in May. We don't know what the ending's going to be. We don't know then whether the winner's going to go, I'm taking 6 months off or whatever it's going to be. Joshua's just got to concentrate on being Joshua. He's just got to go, I'm fighting, man, and I'm fighting on this day, and we're gonna get cracking. I would not be opposed to Anthony Joshua teaming up and having another go with Josie Parker. I really wouldn't, mate. As a fight, from a fight fan's point of view, I'm like, well, there's a resurgence in Parker. There's a resurgence in AJ. I know we've seen it once and it wasn't the most attractive. I know that. But I think it'll be different this time around. I think we'll get an actual really good fight. And from a fight fan's point of view, I would be okay with Joshua fighting Parker before he ends up fighting Fury or Usyk. Because with all due respect, as you've just highlighted there, two great wins under Ben Davidson. Give me another level to it. Because we're talking about a boxing novice and Otto Wallen, who's not being at world championship level. Josie Parker is better now than he was when he was a world champion.
Correct.
I'm absolutely all in. If they come back and say, listen, we can't guarantee when this is going to happen. AJ needs to be active. Parker wants to be active. We're going to do the fight. That's a fucking belter, mate. I'm absolutely cool with that and having no trinkets on it whatsoever. Just have the fight.
Because don't forget, AJ had 6 minutes, less than 6 minutes away on Friday night.
Yeah.
So he's fresh as a daisy. And Gary didn't land a single thing of note. Nope. So AJ's going to be fresh as anything. I know he's at a tough camp. I know psychologically it's taxing to go through these things. And he was under pressure, regardless of how well he got rid of Ngannou. He was under huge pressure because when you're in against a puncher, especially a novice puncher as well, it's the unorthodox nature of their lack of boxing ability that makes them especially dangerous. We talked a lot about Ngannou throwing when AJ throws. Heavyweights don't tend to do that because the danger of letting that guy throw and I'm going to throw at the same time. But Ngannou being not only convinced of his own chin, but a raw novice making fundamental mistakes, it's always dangerous when stuff like that happens. So for AJ to come through that week would have been absolutely taxing. There was so much pressure on him. But he's delivered now, and he has the euphoria of delivering now. But you're right. Why bother sitting on the goal, on the sidelines?
Yeah.
You know what Fury's like? It'd be just like Fury to go and beat Usyk and then talk his way into a defense of the four belts against fucking Derek Chisora in the 15th time you've ever fought. It'd just be like Fury to do that. And I like this version of AJ where he's like, nah, man, I don't care about those two guys. I don't care about what you say. Where I'm me. I know my value and I know my worth. I just want to be a three-time champion. I'll keep busy. I'll just do me and I'll let you fucking do you and let the pressure of the fans and Uncle Turkey and everybody else associated to go, nah, Tyson, nah, man. No one's interested in seeing you. If you beat Usyk, there's no other fight out there whatsoever, not even Usyk 2. As long as you're a clear victor in that Usyk fight, you have to face Anthony Joshua next. Right now, Joshua seems down for it. And right now, you start thinking, AJ's always been down for it. AJ's always been down for the Fury fight. That's a fact. It's Fury that hasn't been down for it. Hence the reason why Fury's only had 6 world title fights in his entire career.
Listen, everybody knows where my head's been at with why that fight's not materialised. I think Anthony Joshua's always been in. Maybe members of his team haven't always been in because they're protecting their own interest.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think that Tyson Fury's team, they've always been in. I think Frank's always been in. I think he's always fancied Tyson Fury to have a go with Anthony Joshua. But listen, when you, as I've said on many occasions, when you're consistently inconsistent with the things that you say, the way that you behave, the way that you do things, you then obviously lose credibility with the fan base, don't you? Yeah. Time's going to tell. At the end of this, we'll all be able to look back at all these lads' careers and we'll be able to make a proper judgment as to what they did when they did it. Don't get me wrong, there's been champions from the past that have had shit fights that we've all mourned about. But in the end, we look back at it and go, well, actually, they did this person, this person, this person, and this person. Yeah, it took a little bit longer than what we wanted, but we got them eventually. I'm pretty confident that everything that's going on in Saudi Arabia, they're not taking any messing about. They've got to sort the pacing of their events out. But when it comes to matchmaking, we're definitely going in the right direction. There's been a development in the last 6 months from the circus to fights that are really catching the imagination of the fight fans. And if they can get Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk in the ring in May, mate, we're flying, because the month after that, we're getting Beterbiev Bivol 5v5 on the Matchroom Queensbury thing. Mega. It's all looking really, really good. Which leads us in nicely to talk about that co-main event.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On paper, mate, fantastic fight. Zhang coming off the back of two signature wins against Joseph Parker. Joseph Parker coming off a signature win against Deontay Wilder. Parker gets his hand raised in the end. Now, I've had to go back and rewatch this because obviously I'm doing a watch along and I'm concentrating on a live TV show. It's all this. So I'm not watching the fight really. And I'm with other people and some are watching it sporadically and what have you. And then every 2 minutes in my ear, I'm getting someone shout, Parker's down. So I'm looking up at the screen and Parker looks like he's dazed and he's all over the gaff. I'm thinking, geez, right, all right. Zhang's doing Zhang stuff. Right, okay, cool. Back to the conversation. Parker's down. Blah, blah, back over here and I'm watching this all over and stuff. So at the end, I have no idea really of what's happened over a 12-round period. So the conversation's going round. Oh, well, Parker were down twice. Has he done? And anyway, he's got the decision. I've been shown the cards and all this type of stuff. I've seen reaction from fans and all this. So I had no real of my own data to judge against what other people were saying. So Saturday morning, I goes back and watches it, right?
Yeah.
I'm on the train on the way home and I watch it. And I'm thinking, my highlight pre-fight of going into rewatching it was Zhang's put this guy on his ass twice. Right. How has Joseph Parker won this fight? I watch it. That's all that Zhang did. That's it. That's all that Zhang did. Jeez, man, that was it. Don't get me wrong, the good highlights, putting Joseph Parker on his backside twice. But what else did he do? Joseph Parker was absolutely fantastic for 85% of the fight and thoroughly deserves to be walking away as a victor. The re-emergence of Joseph Parker in the last two fights under the tutelage of Andy Lee is exciting. I say the kid, he's still the youngest out of all these people that we're talking about in this heavyweight division. He was champion at 24. He is better now than he was when he was champion.
Definitely.
Absolutely. The composure that he shows in the difficult moments of being dumped on his backside by a 20 stone fella was incredible. Got back on his game, didn't throw it out the window, stayed to his game plan, boxed fantastically well, really, really well, and deserves the win.
Yeah, he did absolutely deserve the win. You know, obviously, like you on the night, I was two sheets of the win, and I was chatting away and you're kind of watching it, but you're reacting to the big moments, and absolutely Zhang owned the big moments. But I when I scored it back again, I give Zhang the first three rounds. I thought Zhang, as always, big, strong, starts really well. Took Parker a little bit of time to get his range, and then that knockdown in round number three, basically at that point, I've got Zhang four rounds up after three. And I'm like, right, okay. But I remembered Parker then completely, you know, finding his range, doing really well, moving in and out, and Zhang just starting to flatline. And after round three, I only give Zhang one more round, and that was round eight, because he scored a knockdown in round eight. So I actually scored it
8-4.
8-4 in favour of Parker, which with the two knockdowns constitutes
114-112.
Yeah, so I had it 114-112 in favour of Parker. Now, one of the judges had it exactly the same way. Another judge had it as a draw. I can see a draw as well. If I give one more round to Zhang, then there's your draw. Yep. So I can see that. I thought 115-111 was a little bit wide, but the right man won, and that's the main thing. I thought Joe Parker was brilliant. He didn't panic. He didn't have a crisis moment when he got dropped in that third round. It was like they'd gone, right, we know he's big, we know he's strong, we know he's fast. He's got incredibly fast hands, Zhang, for a big guy. Plus, factor in the fact Joe Parker hasn't faced the Southpaw in 10 years. All these things are issues. They're all red flags. But it's as if him and Andy Lee went, right, first three or four rounds, it's going to be tough, because he's at his sharpest, at his brightest, at his fastest. If we get dropped, we don't panic. It's like they constituted that in. We get dropped, don't panic. Don't worry about it. It'll probably help us, because he'll unload even more. We just got to make sure that his follow-up assault doesn't land clean. We've got to stay out the way of that. We've got to keep moving. I thought it was absolutely to the T. Him and Andy Lee right now, you know, talk about AJ and Ben Davison, but him and Andy Lee right now have just got something right. You know, that's that lightning in a bottle. It's what every fighter dreams of. Yet this coach, where you're inside each other's head, and it's just working, and it's absolutely working for them. I thought he was brilliant, brilliant. It wasn't the most entertaining fight. I think a lot of people like us were, you know, caught up in different conversations, and part of the reason was it was two big heavyweights kind of nullifying. The pace wasn't great, but Joe Parker's winning rounds. And if in Joe Parker's world, facing a guy of that size, 20-odd, 30 or 50 pound heavier than you, whatever he was, it's about surviving, landing shots and winning rounds. Joe Parker was never going to knock him out. It was about winning rounds, and he did that. And for me, like you've just pointed out, if that unlocks a showdown with Anthony Joshua, nobody in boxing deserves it more.
Yeah. Right, go on. Score it. Ray Vargas, Nick Ball. Let's go.
Do you know what? I watched it back again yesterday, and I've got to be honest, I thought it was an awfully straightforward fight to score. Really straightforward, because it was like a game of it was like, you know,
two halves.
To use a football term, it was a game of two halves.
Yeah.
Ray Vargas
won the after six, what have you got?
After six, I've got Ray Vargas 6-0.
Okay.
On night, I gave Nick Ball round 6. But when I watched it back yesterday, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it to Vargas. It was super close. I thought round 6 was super close. I give it to Nick Ball on the night. I give it to Vargas on rewatch yesterday, probably because I was trying not to be scouse biased. Because on the night, I even said to in Jordan the watch along, I was like, I give Nick Ball from 6 onwards, which means I had him winning it regardless of the knockdowns. But I'm not sure whether it's just because Nick Ball did better in 6 than he did in the previous 5, that old narrative. So I give it to Vargas. But regardless, straightforward fight to score. First 6 to the champion, second 6 to the challenger. When you throw the two knockdowns in, what are we talking about here? It's not even close. I thought Nick Ball got... it's not a robbery. And people use the term robbery far too much in this sport. So I'm not going to go down that route. But I think anyone who's ever watched the fight, scored a fight, could see that those knockdowns were the critical moment in the fight. Nick Ball should be world champion right now.
I also scored it 6 apiece. So 114-112, right? I've done it slightly different. I've got it 5-1-5-1 is what I've got it. So with what you've just said there, let's say...
Which were your shared rounds? Sorry. Oh, sorry. Which round did you give Nick Ball in the opening 6?
6th round. like what you just said.
You did give him the six, right? Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So 5-1, and I think the one after the first knockdown, is what I've given Rev Argest. Yeah,
you give him round nine.
I think. But 5-1, 5-1. Like you said, it's completely a fight of two halves because Nick's struggling so much with range early doors and he just can't get on the inside. He's leaping in from miles away. And Rev Argest is, nice body shots, lovely bits of body work. Let's get back out. All good. But then he gets the range going. He gets in there. He makes it ugly, makes it aggressive. Yes, it's not the prettiest stuff in the world. There's lots of forearms and elbows and all these types of things going on. But he wins rounds. The clean work's there. The forceful work's there. And obviously he scores a couple of knockdowns in those rounds as well. So, for clarity, my card is six rounds apiece, 114, 112, two knockdowns on there. Nick Moll wins the fight. However, you only need one round to go against what I've just said in order to get 113 apiece.
Yeah.
Of which I can see.
Yeah.
I can absolutely see it. I can see that card of 113, 113. So that means Vargas wins 7, Ball wins 5, you get 113 apiece. Completely see that. So therefore, where the overall scoring and result of it being a draw, I'm not offended by. What I'm baffled by is he's 8-4. You get an 8-4 in there. Either way. So the other two judges have gone 8-4 either way, haven't they? Now, maybe, I don't know, mate. They don't feel right. It doesn't feel that it's an 8-4 in either man's direction. It was close. It was tight. I can just about see that 7-5 in favour of Vargas to give you a 113-113. Like I said, I thought the two knockdowns were the significant moments of the fight. I had it 114-112 in favour of Nick Paul. He is unlucky. He'll learn tons. He didn't lose. So there's an opportunity to come again, maybe the rematch it, or maybe he goes down a different path and maybe finds someone a little bit more his stature to fight for a world title next time round, because it wasn't the prettiest fight, let's be honest, was it?
No, it wasn't. But then, you know, I think a lot of that was down to the fact that Vargas was doing an awful lot of holding. You know, Vargas was...
He couldn't keep up with the pace, could he? He couldn't keep up with that.
Exactly. He was like a Man United winger. He was on the floor, you know, diving around everywhere, moaning to the referee, complaining all the time. Those are crisis moments because he didn't like the pace that Nick Ball was setting. I think a lot of these guys think that, okay, I'll ride this storm, and once you slow down, I'll pick you off. Nick Ball doesn't slow down. He's a pocket rocket. He's got such an engine on him. And I think Vargas just got completely overwhelmed by him. Vargas, who boxed brilliantly for six rounds, you know, people were coming at me going, well, what are you going to say now? The Scouts is getting his head boxed off. Yeah, he was. Vargas was too good, too slick, too experienced.
Long-rangey body shots were beautiful.
Yeah,
weren't they?
He looked at it and gone, kid's 5'2". Right, okay, I know what to do with these guys. I'm a 30-fucking-7 fight multi-weight world champion. Watch this. This is my bread and butter. And for 5-6 rounds, I'm like, yes, Vargas, just too slick, sees it coming, sees it, reads everything. But once he started to slow, once his engine started to slow, once maybe the fact that he was up at super featherweight, now he's coming back down to featherweight, making weight for the first time in a couple of years, all that's taxed on your body, the older you get. Once he started to slow and Nick Ball, if anything, got more aggressive, more faster, that's when panic started to set in for Vargas then. That's when he's trying to hold everything else. The first knockdown, which Vargas complained about, Ball did kind of shove him a little bit, but he twisted his body because Vargas had hold of him. And as he fell away, he caught him with that left hook. Perfect shot. Absolute knockdown. Both knockdowns were completely legit knockdowns.
Yeah.
For me, that swings the fight absolutely in Nick Ball's favour. Just this Italian referee, this Massimo Baravecchio, who scored the fight 8-4 in favour of Vargas. This guy, this motherfucker. Basically, other than the two knockdown rounds, he's only given Nick Ball two other rounds. I find that absolutely scandalous if you're watching this fight and you're watching it fairly. But this guy has got history as well, because I had a little bit of digging around his career previously, and he's been over to the UK before, and he was the dissenting referee in Birmingham last year when Tyler Denny beat Macaulay McGowan. If you remember, and it ended up being a split decision, but Tyler Denny won the fight and won it well. But it ended up being a split decision. Mark Lyson and Keenan McCann both scored it in favor of Tyler Denny. This guy, this Massimo Baravecchio, He scored it 7-3 in favour of Macaulay McGowan. So this is a guy that is inconsistently putting in bad scorecards, contradictory scorecards to the rest of the scoring judges. It's people like this that we need to weed out. It's people like this that need to be educated on how to score fights. If you're consistently putting in scorecards that go against the other two judges, it's and causing split decision draw in this case, there should be like a 3 or 4 strikes and you're benched conversation. You know what I mean? Right, that's the third
Premier League referees,
isn't it?
Premier League referees fuck up, right? You're not on this weekend.
That's the third time you've been in a major title fight and your card has been different from the other two cards, extremely different as well. Not just one round or two rounds, but it's on 4 or 5 rounds in the opposite direction from what the other two judges saw. Right, what we're going to do is we're going to bench you and your referee liaison officer, your judging liaison officer in your region or whatever, or WBC representative, because you're obviously registered with WBC, will reach out to you and you're going to have a conversation. I'm not saying it's a full retraining program, but maybe it's a conversation to go, right, what we're going to do is, with a quick Zoom, we're going to watch the fight back, and I just want you to explain to me. Now, obviously, I would love that to be public. I would love it to be in a public forum. That'll never happen. But if we want this sport to get better, because a lot of the chat at the weekend, I don't know what your watch along was like, but a lot of our chat was like, Nick, what can we do? How do we get the scoring better? And obviously the big thing is a universal scoring system would fucking help. Because is Massimo going and sitting ringside with the same thoughts as Ray Danesco in this case, or the Korean judge? Or in that case, I think Mark Lyson was one of the judges. When he sits down to watch that, is he going, right, this is a British title fight, so I'm using the British scoring system. That means X, Y, and Z. Is there a pre-fight sit-down with the three judges to go, right, guys, just to let you know, I'm the representative of the British Boxing Board of Control. This is a British title fight. We score fights criteria for X, Y, Z. I don't care what you like. I don't care what you like to see in there. I don't care if you like sportsmanship, a guy that shakes hands. I don't give a flying fuck. These are how you score a fight. Everyone the same song sheet? Yeah. If you score a round that we think's wrong, we're going to talk to you about it. And until we have that follow-up, until we have that like universal system, ideally, which hopefully Uncle Turkey can start pushing for, we're going to continue to see moments like this, moments that start saying people saying, well, is this a bit corrupt? Is this? And that's a word that we don't want to associate with boxing, but because of scoring, more often than not, we do. And again, I'm like you. I'm not saying it was a robbery. I'm not spitting feathers over the draw. But when a guy's got it this way, 8-4 in favour of the defending champion, it just didn't happen, man.
I completely agree with you, but the same could be said the other way for the other 8-4. Because in the defence of that judge that you're talking about there, his 8-4 is only one round swing away from the 7-5, which ended up being the 113-113, because that's what that is. Because of the two knockdowns, that's what brings it to 113-113. The one that was in favour of Ball, which looks 116-110, and obviously that makes it look so wide, doesn't it? But it's because there's two knockdowns in there that then you end up with a 116-110. That judge is even further away from what the other two saw.
But that judge, if you look at his scorecard, he had the first 6 rounds 4-2. So we only had one round difference from your first 6 rounds.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I think it was just painful to watch because you can see, and again, you don't score fights for aggression. I don't personally. You scored it on damage, and Nick Ball was
clean, effective work.
Damage. The clean effective work was coming from Nick Ball. From round 6 onwards, Nick Ball was landing the clean, effective work. He should be the new champion of the world. Hopefully, Uncle Turkey's seen enough to go to Ray Vargas. Nah, man, you ain't going anywhere else.
Well, we're doing this. I'm going to be dead honest with you, mate. You've got if he's fit and it's not taking too much out of him, that you've got Matchroom versus Queensbury coming up on the undercard of Paterbiev Bivol. You stick Nick Ball on, you stick Ray Ford on in the other side. That's a world title fight. Ray Ford's the champ.
Yeah.
Ray Ford versus Nick Ball. Come on.
Plus, you don't know what Vargas is going to do. It wouldn't surprise me if Vargas went, rematch that guy? Nah, man. I'm going back to super featherweight because that's what I'm putting down to gassing out in the second half of the fight. I went up to super featherweight, tried to come back down. I'm too big for this weight division now. I'm moving on. We need to push that forward because I think Ray Ford said prior, I want to fight Nick Ball in the unification on that Matchroom versus Queensbury card. I agree, but will he be in if Nick Ball hasn't got a trinket? I don't give a fuck about the trinkets personally. Nick Ball versus Ray Varga, Raymond Ford is a sensational fight, but it just might change Ford's attitude if Ball brings nothing, if you like, to the ring.
It's a prettier fight as well, mate. I think stylistically it works a whole lot better. Listen, the good thing is that Eddie Hearn is massively in on Raymond Ford. Frank Warren's massively in on Nick Ball. Turkey Al Sheikh's massively in on both of those promoters. So
isn't the rule that Turkey Al Sheikh chooses one?
So he chooses one weight. He chooses two weights.
And he chooses a weight. Right, okay.
So I'm led to believe it's actually coming out today. So whilst we're recording this, I won't be surprised if this information is already out for people. Eddie chooses two weights. Frank chooses two weights. Turkey Al Sheikh chooses a weight. And then on those weights, those promoters go, right, I'm going to stick this guy in. He's my best super feather, or he's my best whatever. Mate, it's going to be great.
We already know that Turkey's going to choose lightweights because he wants Mark Chamberlain, doesn't he? He's Mark Chamberlain's biggest fan. I think that's going to be his caveat. I choose lightweight. And from that corner, I want Mark Chamberlain. Your corner, bring whoever you like. Chamberlain. Before great.
Do you want to do that one first, then, before Madrimov? Because, listen, we said last week, didn't we? This was Chamberlain's coming out moment. This was the moment for him to really showcase himself. He's been brilliant on those small hall scenes. Portsmouth lad, undefeated. Just needed that little bit of elevation for what he's all about. And listen, Gavin Gwynn's a top guy. And he's put in the hard yards in this sport. But there is levels. And Mark Chamberlain showed those levels in this particular fight. He was absolutely fantastic. And I hope that this sends him on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. And that story did make me laugh last week. And, you know, I'll take it for what it is. If they say it's true, then it's true. Of Uncle Turkey in a conversation saying, I want Chamberlain. And go, Chamberlain who? And he ended up being Mark Chamberlain. Because I have a similar reaction to go, what, the guy from York Hall? You're telling me Uncle Turkey sits in on a Friday night watching your call shows now, does he? It's brilliant if it's true. Absolutely incredible. But then Mark Chamberlain comes in, gets a tough fight with Gavin Gwynn, in my opinion, a step-up fight with Gavin Gwynn from where he's been. The right step up at the right time, don't get me wrong, not overmatched, but you know, this guy's gonna ask questions maybe for the first time at a certain level. And to rise to the occasion under the pressure of being handpicked by the new King Mika, by the new most powerful man in the sport, to come in and to put in that kind of performance, that's all business. You know, again, I look at Tyson Fury and go, see what I mean? The guy's got respect for the opportunity and turns up in the best shape possible with his mind switched on, and he does an absolute number on Gavin Gwynn, who I maintain was a step-up tough opponent for him. Mark Chamberlain looked $1 million. He looked an absolute $1 million. And I tell you what, he's got the man behind him.
With $1 million. More than $1 million,
Those multi-million dollars. And he's going to move quickly. And it wouldn't surprise me if we see Mark Chamberlain fight for a world title inside the next 12 months. I can see him going on a little bit of a Josh Taylor style rise. Now, you'll see a couple of former world champions slip under his pack. And they're going to try and maneuver him into a position. And you know what? He deserves it. Because he rose to the occasion on Friday night. He was brilliant.
Yeah, great performance. Israel Madrimov, is he the new Triple G?
Not half.
Right. Proper, eh?
He was brilliant. Don't get me wrong. You know, we spoke about Khabibov, and we spoke about the fact that this 25-0 record that he's got, it's got at least one pretty serious question mark against it with Beefy. We talk about the fact that he's behind closed doors in Russia his entire career, getting the right fight at the right time. And when it's not the right fight, he's getting it on the scorecards anyway. And there was a lot of questions that will be answered here. But will his experience be a little bit too much for Madrimov, who looks fantastic, but didn't quite get to the highest levels as an amateur? So you're like, is he that good? Or was he literally, was there a gold medalist ahead of him that he just couldn't get past? Or was there a ceiling on his amateur capabilities? Will there be a ceiling on his professional capabilities? It was a fantastic matchup. This was the one matchup which I was delighted it went ahead. But on the night, Madrimov was just levels above Khabibov. Levels above. He looked brilliant. So aggressive.
All in all, the best card that they put together on paper so far.
Yeah.
In Saudi Arabia. It's obviously delivered a signature moment with Anthony Joshua doing what he did to Francis Ngannou. The rise of Joseph Parker continues. Nick Ball proves that he's at world level. Just a little bit of a shame that he isn't a world title holder. I'm sure he's going to come again. You've got Madrimov, who's caught everybody's imagination as the next version of Triple G. And Mark Chamberlain has popped his head above the surface as a serious contender in this weight division as well.
Before we put it, Louis Green, shout out to Louis Green as well, with all due respect, gets brought in as an opponent to build the career of Jack McGann. And we know Jack. We know Jack's family. Yeah. I've known Jack an awful long time. I was heartbroken when I watched it, to be totally honest with you. I was devastated for Jack because I know how much he's sacrificed and put into this game. The problem is, rather like Francis Ngannou, when your life is MMA and then you switch to boxing, you're always going to be playing catch-up. And Louis Green has been there, done it, fought for the Commonwealth title, very experienced. You can't afford to pour out a lazy jab against someone like Louis Green, who has got his back against the wall. He's like a wild dog now, back against the wall, on being brought in as an opponent in Saudi Arabia for a Warren-signed, you know, marquee name that they're trying to build into something else, a big puncher. All right, sound. I'm going to come out fighting. And when he poured that jab out, maybe just threw a shot over the top. It wasn't the first lazy jab of Jack's as well. I don't want to beat Jack when he's down because I love the kid. I love him. But the difference between catching up now to guys that have boxed their entire lives and you've been a very good boxer, extremely good at MMA, that step over is so big. You know, we've all been conned because what Ngannou did with Fury. In reality, going from high-level MMA to high-level boxing is not a step. It's a leap. It's a chasm. It's a chasm. And I thought, he will come again, Jack. Honestly, Martin Murray's a good mate of mine, and I think they've got something well going on, and he certainly won't make that mistake again. But you've got to give all credit to Louis Green. And then Louis Green on the microphone, if you haven't seen it, go and find it. Absolutely rocked it. Talking about his family, talking about his kids, talking about his kids not seeing him, but being at home. And oh my God, it was incredible. So Louis Green had a moment as well. Good for him.
Yeah. Apart from the pacing of the show, I think a successful night, ladies and gentlemen. Successful night. Great for the world of boxing. Great for boxing fans. If you managed to stay up and watch it live, I'm sure that you're out your seat enjoying it. If you watched it in the aftermath, the morning after, I'm sure it also brought a smile to your face as well. Anthony Joshua has reignited the conversation at the top table. Woof! Can't wait. Bring on May. Bring on May and bring on the undisputed fight between Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. As I said, listen, not going to get carried away, not going to get caught up in the moment. Anthony Joshua absolutely has got us all excited again. But the hierarchy at the top, for me, hasn't changed. Last week when we were talking about who is the best of this era so far, it's not defined as of yet. I personally have Usyk slightly ahead of Tyson Fury. I know people will come at me for that. And then you've got Anthony Joshua just underneath them. May is going to decide the number one. People will say, well, undisputed, that's it. That's the era done. If Tyson Fury beats Alexander Usyk, for me, he still has to go and beat Anthony Joshua just to rubber stamp the era. If Alexander Usyk beats Tyson Fury, then he has more of a conversation of being the number one guy, seeing as he's already got two wins over Anthony Joshua. But I won't mind seeing Anthony Joshua part three with Alexander Usyk because it might play out slightly differently. We'll find out. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get to find out because these are exciting times. Listen, thank you very much for tuning into us. You can see the red button in the little corner there, just underneath his left arm. If you press that, it'll ask you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you could do that, that would be brilliant. And if you only want to listen to us, you can do it via our website, fightdisciples.com. All the audio feeds under the sun are there. It's been an action-packed weekend because we've got an MMA show as well for you to go and get excited about. So if you like your UFC, Sugar Sean O'Malley sprinkled the sugar all over Miami. And that podcast is available for you as well. So go and get stuck into that. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. There we go.
Mega.
Right. I'll stop this then, and then I'll play with it. And then when you're ready, just give me a text and I'll set a new feed up.